This is your host, Michelle, and you're listening to Old TV with a New Twist. Let's see what classic television show we're watching and talking about this week. And welcome to episode 42 of Old TV with a New Twist. And welcome to 2022. I'd like to welcome back my co-host for his seventh time. Are you going to argue with me? Because every time he always says, it seems like so many more.
No, you're always right. So I take your word for it.
In all things.
Yes.
And you can guess he's my husband also. But we're here. This is something very exciting for us.
Yeah.
You excited, babe?
I am.
Okay. We're going to have a discussion about The Twilight Zone. And this was requested by our listener and my daughter's best friend, Gabby, who kind of told me, you better not do the Twilight Zone podcast unless I'm on it with you. So she may be enjoying this episode, or she may be really mad at us right now. But
yep.
Gabby, you know we love you. And right now, when we're recording this, you are in Disney World with our daughter having a blast. So I'm sure you don't mind. So we're going to go on with the Twilight Zone. Got all my apologies out of the way.
And both of our kids right now are probably saying, nerd.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Both of our kids make fun of us about watching the Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah, we'll get into that. Okay. Let me just tell you a little bit about the Twilight Zone. For those out there who've lived under a rock and don't know what it is, Twilight Zone ran for five seasons in 1959 through 1964. According to IMDb, it was a classic science fiction anthology series about ordinary people in extraordinary situations involving futuristic societies, space travel, alien invasions, dreams, death and the afterlife, time travel, and cautionary tales of dystopian societies and conformity.
Wow. That's a mouthful. What? Who made that up? They were doing some psychedelic drugs.
Woof.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jeez.
You can't talk about Twilight Zone without talking about what man, Ted?
Rod Serling?
Yes.
Yes. Well, he was Twilight Zone.
He was the creator, producer, wrote a lot of the episodes, and of course, the classic narrator in all those episodes. He originally wrote The Time Element in 1958. It was just a little pilot episode, and they shelved it for a year. And then finally, somebody dug it up and said, this is kind of cool. Let's make it.
And the rest is history.
It started
classic.
In 1959, right? He wrote 92 of the 160-something episodes of the original run. But two of the other writers that I always notice their names, one of them was Richard Matheson. He wrote, I think, one of the most awesome movies of all time, Somewhere in Time.
Right.
With Jane Seymour and Christopher Reeve.
Right.
He wrote that, well, the book that eventually became that movie.
Okay.
And also the other writer
I have two names in my mind.
Okay.
And I know Earl Hamner, right?
And was a writer. He was the creator and writer of The Waltons.
Burp.
Yes.
Yeah. You love that show.
I love that show. Anyway, the show won three Emmys, two for outstanding writing and one for cinematography. And Rod Serling won a Golden Globe.
Right.
For best producer director. So, first of all, we're going to tell you our specific relationship with the Twilight Zone. Obviously, this show was started in 1959. Neither one of us were born yet.
Right.
When it ended, we were both still in diapers. So,
why the fascination?
Why the fascination? And it is a fascination because every year on the Sci-Fi Channel, there is a Twilight Zone marathon. It used to be a 24-hour Twilight Zone marathon.
Right.
Now it's like 3 days long. It
right.
starts like the day before New Year's Eve and goes all the way through. And we sit and watch that thing because New Year's Day is kind of our day to relax after all the holidays.
Right.
And we're always home. And we love it. So why, Ted?
Why do we watch it? That's an excellent question. And I still don't have an answer to that other than nostalgia.
I can refer right back to when we talked about the crime drama shows of the 1970s. Yeah. You're like, nostalgia, watching it with my mom, you right. know? Is that the same?
I think that's probably part of it, but that seems to be too easy of an answer. That's probably a big part of it because it just brings me back. It's a show that we watched when I was young. And who doesn't want to be young again, right? So, yeah, it just seems to bring you back to that time, and it's just an easy time for you.
Well, but you see, I don't feel that way about this show.
Yeah.
I can feel that way about happy things, but this show was very dark.
Yep.
So it's not like, oh boy, that was a happy time. It was like they were warning us about nuclear war and all kind of stuff. Can I imagine as a child, it was number one, hard to really grasp the messages. Mm-hmm. And number two, maybe a little frightening for kids.
Yeah. I think though, when I was younger, I used to watch this show and The Night Gallery.
Oh,
and
yes.
I always compared Twilight Zone to Night Gallery. Now, Night Gallery is more scary.
Oh, yeah.
Twilight Zone is weird, but Night Gallery was really scary. I remember.
That was Rod Serling also.
It was.
He did that after this was canceled.
Very good show.
So what we're going to do now is we're each going to tell our top five-ish episodes. Okay?
All right.
And I got my paper here, and I went through. He's got his too.
For those in Radio Land, right, I have it. This is the first time I've typed notes.
Oh,
first time ever.
I'm impressed. And this is a guy who hates doing this because he hates the homework.
So it's a good thing we're not on TV because we're also in pajamas. So
yeah, you're in pajamas. I'm in sweats, yeah. But you're in pajamas. Absolutely. But I actually said, okay, I'm gonna sit here and just I got out the list of all the episodes. I said, I'm just gonna pick my absolute favorites.
Impossible.
I got 41.
Yeah.
41.
Right.
Of the ones that are like my absolute.
I know.
So then I had to sit down and get it down to five. Well, I got it down to six. So you're just going to have to deal with that extra one.
I have
one.
Seven.
You can see? All right. So I don't feel so bad.
And I bet we're going to be surprised at what you think mine are. And I think yours are.
I think you probably would know my number one one.
I think I know your number one one.
Right
yes.
off the bat.
Correct.
Tell me
you
what
want
my
me to tell you it is?
Yeah.
Willoughby.
Yes. My husband bought me that bell, y'all, for my podcasting, and it's perfect to use it right here. A Stop at Willoughby is the name of it. If you've ever seen Twilight Zone, this is a fantastic episode. This man is miserable in his life, and he lives in New York, and he takes the train into the city, out into Connecticut, where he lives, and is miserable, and his wife is a horrible shrew. Right, babe?
Right.
Boy, she is a horrible
shrew.
She's
pretty miserable.
Yeah. And on the train, he falls asleep, and he wakes up, and the train is stopping at this idyllic town called Willoughby.
Right.
And that's, we're not going to get into detail, but it's like this perfect place in his mind, Willoughby. And it's fantastic. It is, I love that episode. My very favorite.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And in my number two is Spur of the Moment.
Okay.
Season five. It stars Diana Hyland, who would go on to be on the first season of Eight is Enough, one of my other favorites. She was very young in this. And it's another, it's kind of like a time travel thing. She's going back in time to warn herself not to do something. It's really cool. It goes kind of back and forth in time where she's trying to go back and warn herself. And
I knew that would be on your list.
Yeah. Number three, Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up?
Yep. That's a good one.
A bunch of people in a diner. One of them's a Martian. You don't know which one it is. And the whole episode, you're trying to figure it out. It's pretty good. Number four, 100 Yards Over the Rim. This guy is in the 1800s leading a wagon train over the desert to trying to get to California, and his son is sick. And he said, I'm going to go walk over that rim and see if there's water or something because they need water. They're all dying. And when he walks over the rim, he's in 1960. So it's kind of weird. It's very good.
Very good.
And then number five is a tie between two. One of them is Stopover in a Quiet Town, where this couple wakes up in this town that they just don't know where they are. And it has quite a twist at the end.
Right.
And then The Bewitching Pool.
Right.
Okay. Which two kids that are just miserable at home escape through their swimming pool to this utopian society of all these kids who just bake cakes and swim all day.
Right.
And that's how they get away from their miserable life. And a lot of these deal with people escaping their horrible reality and or some form of time travel, which is me all over. So that's my favorite ones.
Okay.
Okay. Go on, Ted.
It's interesting when you say those things, because those are some of my favorites too.
Are you serious?
I know, but no, I didn't have those listed.
Well, then
but when
not
you mentioned
favorites.
Earlier that you had 41, I agree with you. I was looking online this morning I was going through every season. I'm like, I like that one. I like that one. Mm-hmm. I like that one. I can't write. I mean, I like every one of them. Almost. There were probably five that I really just don't like.
Right.
And I'll start with my favorites. Not in any necessary order, I think, but my top would be The Howling Man. You remember that one?
Yes. And okay, go ahead. But I don't like it for specific reasons. We're going to talk about that.
And I'll tell you what that's about if people haven't seen that. It's about a man who's traveling through, I don't know what country it is, even if they mention it. He's on an excursion with a group of people. He gets lost in a storm and he comes across what seems to be an old castle in the middle of nowhere. It's like I forget what they call it.
It's a monastery.
A monastery. So, yeah. Right. Well, he's in this monastery or whatever, and there's a guy howling, and they have locked up in a room, right? So mm-hmm. Long story short, the guy that's locked up is the devil. And that's why I like it so much, because the head of the monastery, he says that a man will not recognize the devil with his eyes wide open. He just won't recognize the devil. And that's a pretty cool story to me, because the wanderer who gets lost, he lets the guy out. He thinks he's in prison, falsely in prison. So he lets him out. And he comes to find out that he's a devil. So that's a pretty cool story. My second one on the list is 16 Millimeter Shrine.
Oh, remember that one? That's on my top 41.
I know. Where the woman, she gets, it's this old movie star who doesn't want to age. And she just locks herself in her room in her house. And she's watching her old movies. Mm-hmm. And she just wants to go back. And she wishes hard enough. And she goes back, actually, and goes back into one of the movies. And she stays in the movie. Monsters on Maple Street, number
yes.
three.
Yes.
Again, that's a pretty good message, in my opinion, about mankind, right? Yeah. If we lose electricity for a couple of hours, people go nuts and start blaming everybody for everything. People Are Alike All Over. Remember that one?
Yes. Roddy McDowell.
Roddy McDowell, yes. So he's an astronaut and they travel to another planet. And his fellow astronaut tells him, don't be afraid if we come across any people on another planet. Don't be afraid of them because people are alike all over. And sure enough, at the end of the episode, they cage him like an animal, because that's what we do here on Earth, right? We put animals in cages in the zoo and things. So that's, people are alike.
But they put him in his natural habitat.
It's his natural habitat,
a three-bedroom, two-bath home
for that,
in the suburbs.
Right. That's his deal. But he's it's like we assume we put a lion in a cage and he's okay because it's his natural habitat. Who knows what he thinks? Eye of the Beholder.
Oh.
You don't like that one?
No.
I like that one.
Yeah.
With the pig people?
Yeah.
Because again, it's a message. Yeah. Ugly is pretty and pretty is ugly.
Right.
Right. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So this woman who's supposed to be one of the ugliest people on earth, she ends up being one of the most beautiful people on earth.
She's Ellie Mae.
Ellie Mae, right. hot back in the day.
Yeah.
And one of your other questions too, The After Hours.
Yes.
Is one of my top.
Yeah.
With the mannequin.
See, that one was, there was so many. That one would have been if I had more, but.
Well, I did seven. We wanted to talk about the scariest episode, too. So that's my scariest, I think.
The After Hours?
Yeah, I think it's just creepy.
Okay.
Mannequins are creepy. And she goes up to the top floor and they're all just standing there and they're all come to life.
Yeah.
It's just creepy. And the last one I have is The World of His Own. If you remember that one.
The guy who creates.
He creates Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah. He creates characters by talking into a dictation machine. He dictates, describes them, and they come to life. I think that's pretty cool. So, yeah, I mean, it's impossible, though, to pick.
It is impossible to narrow down, y'all. But for me, the scariest, and it's the reason why I kind of don't like it, is because it creeps, is The Howling Man.
Right.
I can sit here and we can talk about Martians and time travel, but Satan and him being unleashed upon the world because he can disguise himself as anything or anybody, and we don't know it, and then unleash him on the world, that is uncomfortable. That one bothers me.
Yeah.
It really does. And then the one that I think has the best way you could really read the message is The Shelter, where the old man and his neighbors are all having dinner and they're teasing him because he's building a bomb shelter.
Right.
And making fun of him. They're all partying and having backyard barbecues and he's building this bomb shelter in his basement. And once again, this is 1959, 1960 when everybody was afraid of a nuclear attack.
Right.
So then the sirens start going off and everybody wants to get in the shelter and they turn on him.
Right.
And it is such a commentary on society and people. And because in the beginning, they're best friends. And at the end, they have destroyed his house. They have turned on and they turn it on each other. It's just, it's quite a commentary.
There are a lot of episodes like that, I think. The commentaries on human nature.
Right. And then one thing that they said about the show, about the writing, the main thing was Twilight Zone's writers frequently used science fiction as a vehicle for social commentary. Mm-hmm. True.
Perfect.
It is usually parables or fables that reflect the moral and philosophical choices of the characters.
Right.
That's going deep, but I think you can pick that out in many, many, many episodes. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why this show was so extraordinary, because of that thing. They addressed so much.
Yeah. Another episode that I didn't pick, but I forget the name of it, where the old man, the hunter, the hunt,
yes,
it's called. That's another one to me that reminds me of The Howling Man, where somebody says in the episode, man will walk right into hell with both eyes open.
Yeah.
But a dog can tell, because his dog won't go into hell because he can sense that it's right. hell. And the old man's ready to go. So a man will walk right into hell with both eyes open.
Yeah, that's another. All of that's them have such crazy. Great messages. The only thing in that one is he always called his wife that old woman.
That old woman, yeah.
That old woman.
Let's go see the old
woman. Hey, speaking of old women,
yep.
Something else that we always do when watching.
I don't know where you're going with that.
Y'all.
Break.
Because we're watching this show and there are these people that to us look like they're 85.
Yes. Yes.
And when I look up their age, they're younger than I am now. I'm like, how, what?
Everybody looked old back then.
And
but
we have to conclude it's the hairstyle.
Yes.
It's the fact and the clothes they wore. Yeah. And the fact that women didn't dye their hair. I would probably be completely gray if I didn't dye my hair, to be truthfully honest.
Right.
And I'm not that old, y'all. But I just, it amazes me.
That's one thing we do, though. Not just with the Twilight Zone. We do that with every show we watch.
Well, we just both listed our favorite episodes, and you know what I'm amazed at? We did not overlap at all.
No, that's true.
I thought we'd overlap maybe on like the Bewitching Pool or the Martian, Will the Real Martian Please Stay.
I'll have you guys know that this year, right, we usually watch it on TV. This year we did something different. Michelle rented the DVDs from the library, and she was in charge of episodes that we watched. So as I was going through this morning, looking at my favorite episodes, looking at every episode from every season, I was like, damn, we didn't see that one this year. She skipped that one. Son of a gun. Dang, she skipped that one. I'm like, what's up? I think I'm in charge of the DVDs next year.
Okay.
Because I know we're rather DVDs because you can. It's easier to skip. It's easier to skip ones you really don't like. And it was a good one. A couple of good ones.
Really?
Yeah, but that's all right. I'll be in charge next year.
Okay.
We'll
See if we remember that in 365 yeah, right. days. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
350 days.
Right.
I want to talk about least favorite. I had that. We had that as a list.
Episodes.
As
oh.
a list of things.
Okay.
I have two least favorite episodes.
Okay. I bet we're going to agree on those. Go on.
Five characters in search of an exit.
Yes.
That's my second to least favorite, not my least.
So many people love that one, though.
Really?
I think maybe you and I haven't given it its proper shot.
We need to watch it
We need to watch it again.
We'll
because
watch
that
it
is listed as a favorite on a lot of lists.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, go on. What's your second?
That was my second. Oh. My first least favorite is The Invaders.
Yes.
With Agnes freaking Moorhead. She doesn't say a word. The whole
Andorra
episode.
On Bewitched.
Andorra, yeah. Andorra, yeah. Whatever. She is... I mean, I don't know how much she got paid for that, but she didn't say a word.
No.
It's an old woman, lives in a cabin in the woods, and she hears some noise, right? And it turns out that it's an invasion of aliens. But they're like 3 inches tall, and they're terrorizing her in her cabin.
Yeah. That's a terrible one. Especially because there's no dialogue. Yeah.
Right. Well, there's two with no dialogue, right?
Elizabeth. that's the next question.
Go ahead.
Is recognizable like stars,
right?
Actors who later would become famous or semi-famous, and that one had Elizabeth Montgomery and Charles Bronson.
That's correct.
As they were the last survivors on Earth after a nuclear war. Again,
this is funny. My note next to that: young actors who became famous.
Yeah,
because we talked about that as being a bullet point. My note there is: Shell can take over.
You don't have any.
I didn't list any because you know actors. You have a great memory. You
okay, well then
actors.
I'll point them out. And you tell me if you remember what they appeared in.
Right. Right.
Okay. Robert Redford.
Do I remember what episode he was
in? Yeah.
No, not unless you tell me.
He was
Multiple
death.
Choice.
He was the angel of death coming to get that woman, that old lady who was so scared of dying
yes,
and she
correct.
Wouldn't open the door.
We skipped that one this year.
Yeah, we did. We did. William Shatner.
Yes.
He was in several.
He was in a few, yeah.
Yeah.
The one
two.
With the
two.
Asking the little devil head machine. Yes or no questions.
Oh, man. Burt Reynolds was in one, and it's one we don't usually watch. It's called The Bard, where William Shakespeare comes alive.
Okay.
And he's the painter. Roddy McDowell. Yep. We talked about that. Ron Howard. Mm-hmm. Cloris Leachman. Mm-hmm. She played the mother of the little devil child.
Yes.
We said Elizabeth Montgomery, Charles Bronson. Mickey Rooney played the jockey in the one about the jockey. Jack Klugman.
Okay. One that I just thought of.
Who?
Is.
I know I haven't hit all of them.
The boy who plays in, who does The World of His Own, who creates people by dictating into a machine.
Mm-hmm.
His voice.
What was his voice?
Was Santa Claus is Coming to Town. He's the Winter Warlock. For those of you who watch Santa Claus is Coming to Town at Christmas time.
He went on to big success, people.
He was the voice of Winter Warlock. Go check it out. Something Wynn was his name?
Yeah, Keenan Wynn.
Keenan Wynn, something like that.
Okay, now, before we completely get off the subject of favorite and least favorite episodes, I have here the list of Rolling Stone magazine's top 25 Twilight Zone episodes. Now, top 25 is too many to list, but I will do the top 10. And you know, there are a lot of yours in here and not mine, Ted.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Number one, To Serve Man. Number two, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. Number three, Eye of the Beholder. Number four, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. That was also a good one.
That was William Shatner, right?
Number five, The Invaders.
Oh, people like that?
Yes. It's listed as the top. Yeah. And a stop at Willoughby's like 21. So don't even get me started. Right. I don't know who. Well,
Rolling Stone. Okay, it's all like drug heads. No, I'm just kidding. Jeez.
Oof. Okay. Number six, Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up? Mm-hmm. That was one of mine. Number seven is Time Enough at Last. Henry Bemis.
Oh, Bemis. Yeah. I never did understand that, to get off on a tangent, but I never did understand the ending.
Well, it's because he loved reading books. All he wanted to do was read. And then at the end, when he finally could read, his glasses are broken. Yeah. That's just, you know. Number eight, Five Characters in Search of an Exit.
God.
He's rolling his eyes in the back of his head, people. That's one of our least favorites.
Right.
Nine, A Game of Pool. Mm. That's the one with Jack Klugman and Jonathan Winters. I didn't like that one.
Hated it.
And number 10, Living Doll. And that was with Telly Savalas. Okay. That's another big star that was in it. And the doll kills him.
Yeah, that's a good one.
His stepdaughter's baby doll kills him.
Talking Tina.
And then number 11, It's a Good Life. That's the one with the little boy who banishes people to the cornfield. So they're all so good.
They're all very
but
good.
Really, like two, maybe three of those I don't agree with. But, you know, it's Rolling Stone, like you said. Take it with a grain of crack. Okay, moving on. So one of the things, and we kind of talked about this, but themes are often repeated.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think the themes are that they repeated the most, that they were kind of obsessed with back in the day?
I have two themes.
Okay.
Space travel and time travel. To me, a lot of shows were about aliens or space travel. I have three, like Third from the Sun was an example.
Mm-hmm.
To Serve Man.
Oh, there were so many great ones. Oh my gosh.
And we hadn't talked about this, but I have two time travel. We have 100 Yards Over the Rim, which you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That's about time travel. The Odyssey of Flight 33.
Oh, yeah.
Where they go see the dinosaurs. And then Back There was one. That's where your boy, the professor.
Oh, I love that one.
Went back to witness or to try to prevent Abe Lincoln's assassination.
That would have been one of my favorites.
That's a very good one.
That should have been one of my favorites, y'all.
And then Kick the Can. Yes. About the retirement home. That's about time travel, too. I think the guy, only one of them goes back. Well, they all go back except for one.
Right.
I'm telling you, these are all favorites, too, right?
Yeah, everyone he's mentioned, I'm like, oh, that's one of my favorites. One thing we do, too, y'all, we really are nerds. Our kids are correct. We are nerds. And because when we watch a lot of older TV shows, we like to recognize like movie sets or places that's like, oh, I'm always pointing out there's the Bewitched house. I did it on this podcast, like the Partridge Family's pulling out of their driveway in their bus. And there's the Bewitched house down the street. Or there's, you know, the Griswold's house from Christmas Vacation.
Well, these types of things don't make us nerds, right? You're a librarian. I'm an accountant.
We're nerds.
Enough said.
Isn't the Twilight Zone that makes us nerds.
The truth is, we're not nerds because we watched the Twilight Zone.
But we're not.
We watched the Twilight Zone because we're nerds.
Oh.
We were nerds first. I mean, let's be honest. You were a nerd way before you were a librarian.
First of all, I'm a library associate.
Oh, my bad.
And that's not my profession. That is my semi-retirement plaything. I was a senior project coordinator for 33 years.
Well, I'm a manager of financial controls.
So you're the nerd.
Say that without laughing.
Okay. So recognizable sets and locations. I only have one. It is in the very first episode of the whole series, and it's called Where Is Everybody? And it's Earl Holliman. There's another big star. There's so many. And it was the very first episode, and it is so cool. And, you know, I don't know if we pointed this out enough, that a lot of these episodes, weird, weird crap is happening through the whole episode. And then at the end, there's this twist that's like, whoa, that's what was going on here. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't explain it at all, which we've said a lot of times while watching it. But sometimes there's a big twist. And this one has a twist at the end. Mm-hmm. But when he's roaming around this little deserted town, he passes Marty McFly's courthouse from Back to the Future, which won't be made till 35 years later.
Cafe 80s.
In the Cafe 80s.
On the corner, right.
In the theater where you see Jaws later on, Jaws 36 or whatever.
I'm sure that's just all facades of buildings, right?
It is. Yeah. But it's obviously was filmed on the Universal back lot. Mm-hmm. That is the only set that I just really was glaring at me. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that so many years later, it was still standing and still prominently used. You know, so go ahead. What you have to say?
We just noticed, too, I think, just this year watching, the pool in the Bewitching pool.
Yes.
Is also the pool used in Queen of the Nile.
Yes.
When she's getting out of the pool. It's the same shot.
They reused the same angle. Yep.
And also in the Queen of the Nile, the house.
Yeah.
No, not the Queen of the Nile. This is the one where the woman goes back into the movie.
16 millimeters,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they use that staircase in several
episodes.
Several episodes, right.
They use the facades of the houses a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's like the monsters on Maple Street and the shelter. They use that same neighborhood a lot. And it might be the same one they use for Stop Over in a Quiet Town, where those people are in the deserted town. The church in the background, you see.
That's got to be on a back lot somewhere.
Yeah, I'm going to find
those houses. Because they do use those houses a lot. A walk where the guy walks down the street.
Yeah.
Walking distance, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Those houses they use.
Yeah. When he comes upon the... Oh, man. Oh,
and he walks out with a limp.
There's so many. Yeah. He walks in without a limp. He walks out with a limp because shit happens. Okay.
You got to watch it. You're right. You got to watch it.
It is. But stuff happens that happened 40 years ago. And it's weird.
And those little things they don't mention on the show. It's just so subtle.
Yes.
When he walks out, if you don't pay attention, you don't know he has a limp. And he didn't have a limp going in.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And when he went in, a chocolate soda cost 10 cents. Yeah. And when he came out, it cost a dollar or whatever. Right.
Fucking a half.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to talk about some trivia. But before we get into that, the one thing that we must say is that Rod Serling died really early. The show went off the air in 1964, and he died in 1975 at the age of 50. We lost him way too early. It was some complications from a coronary bypass surgery that he had. And it's going to kind of affect everything I'm going to talk about, because all these revivals of the series and whatnot, all of this may have played out differently had he lived. What other great television shows we might have had from his incredible mind. But anyway, on with the trivia. Obviously, Rod Serling, when he was a boy, was a fan of pulp fiction stories and science fiction stories. No surprise there, right? As an adult, he saw topics with themes such as government, war, and society, and human nature in general, which is true. No matter how weird the story it gets, it's all about human nature.
It is.
Oh God, I just thought of another one that I love that was not on our list. The Midnight Sun. I mean, I can't, y'all. Okay. Something interesting that everybody notices. In season two, the network decided, against Rod Serling's wishes, to cut costs by shooting some episodes on videotape rather than film. It severely limited the potential scope for the storyline. So the storylines were basically shot like in one place, and they looked different. Mm-hmm. And
they look older.
Yeah, the whole filming of them looked different. Mm-hmm. And the episodes were 22, Static, The Whole Truth, The Lateness of the Hour, The Night of the Meek, and Long Distance Call. Mm-hmm. And you can remember those in your head, how they looked different. Now, There was 5 seasons. Season 4 consisted of 1-hour episodes instead of 30-minute episodes. But then in season 5, they returned to the half-hour format. That went off the air. Then it came again in 1985 to 1989. CBS produced it. It was 65 episodes, 85 to 89. It was relatively successful.
That's cool.
And then they had Rod Serling's Lost Classics in 1994. Carol Serling, who was Rod Serling's widow, produced an outline for a made-for-TV movie that had adaptations of 3 unfilmed Rod Serling short stories that she found the scripts while rummaging through the garage of their home. Wow. She found these scripts. So they produced it, called it the Lost Classics. And the reviews said she should have left them in the garage. Then there was a 3rd series, 2002 to 2003, 43 episodes. It was on the UPN. It was hosted by Forrest Whitaker. And they did some of the old scripts. They redid them. They redid It's a Good Life, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, Eye of the Beholder, some new ones that only ran for 2 years. And then there was a 4th series in 2019 and 2020. Mm-hmm. That only had 20 episodes.
You gotta let it go.
And it was CBS All Access that ordered this series. It canceled it only after 2 seasons. And they did remake some of the old ones and some new ones.
You can't remake this show.
Yeah. And then there was a 1983 movie, Twilight Zone, the movie. It was produced by Steven Spielberg. But that whole production was marred with, there was a terrible accident. There was a helicopter accident and 3 of the stars were killed. Mm-hmm. And that kind of really, really marred that whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I know me, I didn't want to go see it. So they've tried to do this, reincarnate this series or whatever you want to call it, resuscitate something, this series for a long, long time.
People just trying to make money off of that thing. And you just can't redo a classic.
Yeah, it just hasn't worked. And before I finish talking about all the attempts to revive this series, I just want to say that all of this was made possible because before he died, Rod Serling made the decision to sell his shares of the series back to the network. And that eventually allowed all these Twilight Zone revivals because him and eventually his estate were not able to control any of it. It was completely under CBS's control, and they went on to try and revive it. That might not have happened had he not made that fateful decision to sell them all back, but we don't know, but it's worth mentioning. Here's one that is obviously very fascinating for me, is that there was a movie made based on the script of one of the original Twilight Zone episodes, and it happens to be my favorite episode, A Stop at Willoughby. There was a 2000 movie made called For All Time, and it starred Mark Harmon. And I love that movie. I have it on DVD. Now, for some other trivia about the series that I found interesting.
I got a few when you're done.
Okay.
We'll see.
Rod Serling did not want to do the narration. He wanted Richard Egan. He played in The Music Man, if you like old movies. He had a deep, rich voice. But the studio, because of the contracts, Egan was unable. And Serling says, it's Richard Egan or no one. And then he said, I'll just do the darn thing myself. Now, Rod Serling thought he had come up with the term The Twilight Zone on his own because he liked the sound of it. But after the show aired, he found out that it is an actual term used by the U.S. Air Force pilots when crossing the day and night sides above the world. When they cross over into that, that's called the Twilight Zone. Cool. So there you go.
Cool.
Rod Serling was ranked number 1 in TV Guide's list of the 25 greatest sci-fi legends. I'll agree with that.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rod Serling admitted that several of the episodes, including some of his own, could have been better. What he said about the series was, I guess a third of the shows are pretty damn good. Another third are passable. The other third are dogs. So, yeah.
There you go.
It was ranked number 8 in TV Guide's list of the top 25 cult shows ever. Agreed.
Okay.
Here's a good one. We always comment that Rod Serling is smoking.
Right.
When he does all this. And we're like, can't you put the cigarette down to film this little segment?
Right.
But there's a reason. One of the show's sponsors was the Liggett and Myers Tobacco Company, and Serling served as an on-screen spokesperson for their product, Chesterfield Cigarettes. Sponsor insisted that he always be seen with a cigarette, although he refused to plug their brand on screen. He wouldn't plug it, but he'd hold
have
it.
One.
CBS picked the following as the 10 most terrifying episodes of the original series. Terrifying. Okay.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Nightmare at 20,000 feet, where there's a guy dressed in a horrible ape suit dancing around on the wing of a plane.
The only terrifying part of that is when he opens the curtain.
Opens the curtain and the face is in there. Time Enough to Last. I don't remember that
one. I don't either.
Living Doll, which is the one when the doll murders the guy. Eye of the Beholder. That is not terrifying. It's a Good Life. The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. That one has come up many times. So that's obviously one of the more famous ones. 22. Yes. Room for One More. Yeah.
Honey. Yeah.
Five Characters in Search of an Exit.
Terrifying.
Yeah. The Masks, which we like because that's it's good. Set in New Orleans and Mardi Gras, and that's where we're from. And then The Hitchhiker. Yes. Death is following her across the country, and it's hitchhiking, trying to get this woman to pick him up because he's trying to take her in. It's Tom.
Don't spoil it.
Wonderful episode. Terrifying. So that was it. So that was all my trivia. What do you have, dear?
Only one episode has a sequel.
Wow.
That I found. It's a Good Life. In 2002, Cloris Leachman and Billy Mummy reprised their roles.
Wow.
It's a sequel, so it doesn't say they remade it.
So it's not a remake. It's like a continuation.
It's a continuation, too.
Oh, yes. The 2002 series on UPN, It's Still a Good Life, is a sequel to It's a Good Life.
Okay. And Billy Mummy's a grown butt man.
Wow.
Okay, so, and the last thing I have, well, a couple of things. The opening guitar riff.
Which our listeners heard at the beginning of this podcast.
Which I don't understand because it was written by the band Manhattan Transfer. But they couldn't have used that in 1959. I don't know what year it was written.
Right.
I need to do further research on that. And it's the only television show I've ever seen that cannot pronounce the word robot.
How do they say it, babe?
Say robot.
Robot.
It's a robot.
And there are several episodes that prominently feature these robots. There's actually two robot-themed episodes, Uncle Simon and The Lateness of the Hour.
That's one of my favorite things.
Yes, we laugh.
Proves I'm a nerd.
We laugh at the most ridiculous things, people.
Robot.
Now, we would be remiss if we did not mention what. Let me give you a hint.
Okay.
Our daughter is there right now.
Okay.
Twilight Zone, Tower of
Terror. Tower of Terror, yes.
And I wondered, because obviously we've watched this whole series many times, there is not an episode about an elevator crashing like that. And when you go into the ride, they even have a little thing with Rod Serling talking about people trapped in. And that was all just pieced together and was never really an episode.
Disney stole that? Twilight Zone, Hollywood Tower.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they had to license the name.
Yeah.
But it opened in 1994, 27 years ago. It is one of the most popular rides in Disney's Hollywood Studios, obviously. And from that spawned a movie, A Tower of Terror, which with Steve Guttenberg. Yep. Great movie. It was a fun Halloween movie. Yeah, we usually try and watch it on Halloween. So there's that. It is definitely living on.
Right.
And it will live on every New Year's Eve in this house. Even if we have to slog through it, we'll probably still watch it.
I will be in charge of the DVDs next year.
We'll let you know.
We'll do a follow-up. Yeah. More to come.
Yes. Which means we'll be watching all the crappy episodes.
Right.
Of course, the one with Peter Falk, who plays Columbo.
Yep.
We didn't watch that one. Yep. That hurt his feelings bad, people. Right. Although, if you are an avid listener and you listened to our one about the detective shows, where my husband expertly performed his limericks, you'll know how much he loves Columbo. I mean, no doubt about it.
Right.
And when we were watching our second day of our Twilight Zone marathon, he discovered there was also a Columbo marathon on a different channel.
That's right.
And we actually stopped our Twilight Zone viewing to watch some Columbo. Yeah. So
Columbo.
Twilight Zone
Columbo.
Did get interrupted this year. And I think it's the first time.
And I'll just defend myself and say the reason that was because Columbo was on TV. We had Twilight Zone DVDs.
Right.
We can watch them at our leisure anytime we want.
Well, we've got all the Columbo DVDs too.
This is true. This is true. All right.
So there's nothing. What he just said made no sense, people. Had no credibility at all.
Right.
So that's it. We hope you've enjoyed this little look back at Twilight Zone. If any of you did watch the show, post on our Facebook page and tell us what your favorite episodes were. Tell us where we're right. Tell us where we're wrong.
Right.
Probably a lot
of that. Very good.
Anything you need to say, Ted?
No, that's it.
Okay. So what are we going to end
with? I'm going to say two things.
What are you going to say?
Seinfeld and Robit. Look it up.
I'm not a total nerd, so I'm just going to say Seinfeld, everybody. This is Michelle, and thank you for joining us for this episode of Old TV with a New Twist. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on your Apple Podcast app. And join our Facebook group, Old TV with a New Twist Podcast Group. And tell us what you'd like to hear us talk about, and we'll keep you informed of what's to come. We'll be back next month with a whole new episode of Old TV with a New Twist.